President Bush reports to the Congress this evening on the State of the Union. A majority of the American people are expected to tune in. The speech comes at a critical time, in the midst of a war on terror, and when the economy is in a precarious state. NPR's Linda Wertheimer went on a trip to Pennsylvania, in part to visit members of the Rotary Club of Gettysburg, to ask them what they want to hear from the president.
Gettysburg is not far from Washington, but it seems far away when you visit there. Many of the streets and buildings look much as they did in the summer of 1863, when one of the most terrible battles of the Civil War was fought on farmland just west of town. Like most visitors, we stopped at the battlefield to listen to the echoes from that time to this. The Battle of Gettysburg lasted 3 days. When General Robert E. Lee and his Confederate forces withdrew, the end of the war was still 2 years away. At Gettysburg, 51,000 were killed, wounded, or missing. In the early hours of September 11th, we heard terrible numbers almost that large. There were 50,000 people in the World Trade Center towers. Later, of course, we learned that most of them escaped. Still later, that the death toll for that day was around 3,000. Still one of the worst days in this country since the Civil War. At Gettysburg, there was a battle for a wheat field, almost 20 acres, owned by a farmer named George Rose. We walked down to the bottom of the field where, on the afternoon of the second day, Union troops lined up by a rock wall, Confederate troops came in through a woodlot, and the fighting started. The little field changed hands 6 times in 2.5 hours, and thousands were killed and wounded. By nightfall, it was a grisly 19th century ground zero.
They said you couldn't take a step in the wheat without stepping on a body, and they were dead and wounded. Many of the wounded, of course, that night were crying out for water. Many of them realized they'd been mortally wounded, and they were looking for some care. There were just so many of them that they just couldn't get to all of them. And many of the men who were here died of loss of blood, died of exposure that night. The scene here would have been absolutely ghastly.
Tom Stenhouse, who walked us around the battlefield. The next day was even worse. After the battle, bodies and parts of bodies were hastily buried, some identified, many not. Visitors were already coming when months later the town decided to make a memorial at the site. They began digging for those bodies. As many as could be found were reburied in a special cemetery on a hill overlooking the town and the battlefield. A famous orator, Edward Everett, who was then president of Harvard, was invited to speak at the dedication, and almost as an afterthought, President Abraham Lincoln was asked to come. Many veterans of the battle came, as did people from Washington, and presumably most of the people of Gettysburg. It was a mild November day, and you could still smell the battlefield. There was a platform built for speakers. The hill was muddy because of the bodies that had been dug up and reburied. Some of the graves were still open. President Lincoln spoke at the end of the program about the dead and what remained to be done. The now familiar speech began 47 years ago and ended with the promise that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
The Gettysburg Address was a total of 272 words, so we think between 2 and 3 minutes for the total length of the address. And that's contrasted to Everett Everett, who spoke for 2 full hours. Shortly after Lincoln took his seat, Edward Everett went over to speak to him and indicated that Lincoln had captured the spirit of the occasion in 2 minutes as well as Edward Everett had been able to do in 2 full hours.
Tom Stenhouse, our guide at Gettysburg. Gettysburg is still a small town on the edge of a battlefield. Its economy still runs on farming and now tourism. Millions of people still visit the battlefield every year. The Rotary Club of Gettysburg meets every week at a local hotel. We arranged to meet some of them there for lunch to talk about this president and his speech. Like most people across the country, they approve of what they've seen of President Bush since September 11th. Bob Nordvall is dean of first-year students at Gettysburg College. He's a Democrat.
When Bush came into office, he had not been on the national stage, and so he sort of was an unknown, and he spoke in his campaign platitudes like most politicians speak platitudes. I wouldn't criticize him for that. And I think that 9/11 showed him to have leadership skills that people were impressed by that they didn't really know he had. Now I think is the time to see, does he really have thoughtful skills? Can he be a thoughtful man? Because that's the next step I look for in him in a growth as a president.
Several Rotarians suggested that this year the State of the Union speech should not be a list of promises and programs. Dr. Daniel Hans is pastor of the Gettysburg Presbyterian Church, where Lincoln visited when he was here.
I really see the State of the Union as a time to talk about the overarching visions for our country of who we are, reminding us that we're one nation, even though we're very diverse. What I'd like to see is just some general priorities without too much detail, because I think the more detail, the longer the speech gets. And as my congregation says, shorter is better.
Our Gettysburg group expects most of the speech to be about the war. They want to hear more about the economy, but as I raised these issues, they repeatedly veered in another direction. They wanted to talk about the collapse of Enron, which took down with it the retirement savings of many Enron employees. Enron's political contributions and the close connection of many Bush administration officials to the company raised questions for this group. Tom Dombrowski is a retired Army officer who teaches now at Gettysburg College and at the Army War College.
If some members of the Justice Department have to recuse themselves from conducting an investigation, what does that tell us about the effect money has on politicians and on government? If what they're saying is, I have to recuse myself because there's a possibility it would show some impropriety, then, in fact, what has happened is this money has worked. He needs to address campaign reform.
The president should talk about Enron, we were told, because the American people need to be reassured. Dr. Edward Zoke is a pediatrician and a registered Republican.
There are people who are now saying, I'm sure, what about my KEO? What about my IRA? What do I do now? How do I prevent this from happening? And I think we really need to have somebody calm that situation down and say, this is what happened. This is what we're going to do. This is what you need to do. And this is going to be safe.
The other big issue for this group, as for most Americans, is the economy. Here's a sample of what we heard from Peg Weaver, who's president of the Chamber of Commerce, Bob Nordvall of Gettysburg College, and from Kathy Cresswell, who heads the Adams County Economic Development Corporation. She wants the president to try again on the economic stimulus package.
If we don't go that direction, we have the chance of losing additional businesses. Manufacturers in our country are struggling today to stay alive. I think it's important that we find creative ways to assist them and continue to fund the programs that are related to manufacturing and producing products in our country.
One of the things the president has talked about are tax cuts. Should the president be talking about the tax bill? Anybody? Bob Nordvall.
Well, I'm old enough to remember when the Republicans hated deficits and the Democrats didn't mind them. And, of course, it's all switched around now. But I think, actually, now that we have got in this war situation, when the tax cuts were first proposed and done, we weren't into it. And I think you have to take a look at it. I know there are people who just want to cut taxes because they want a smaller and smaller government, but I would not favor going into further deficits. At the very least, we started to have surpluses and to pay down our debts. I don't like to retreat then into strong deficit spending, which I think we got out of, and I think it's a good thing to get out of.
Peg Weaver, what do you think?
I think it needs to be evaluated. I think we need to be looking at where we are with the economic downturn and determine through that and through some of the other issues that we will necessarily be dealing with because of this war.
Were you for tax cuts when the president proposed them and the Congress passed them?
I was.
Has anything happened to make you change your mind?
At this point, it hasn't, but I would like to see it evaluated before any further tax cuts.
Other issues rated a mention, particularly issues raised in the last campaign, education, Social Security, and Medicare. Here's Peg Weaver again.
This past year, I became eligible for Medicare, and I understand the importance of Medicare. And though we are engaged in a war, we cannot forget that we have these issues that need to be addressed and need to stay at the forefront.
But that's not what most of the group expects. They think that spending to wage war and to protect the United States against terrorist attacks is likely to come first. Tom Dombrowski wants an accounting.
One of the things that I would like to see the president come out with in this speech is a long-range vision of how this war is going to be conducted. What is this money going to be used for? And is it the same old throw money at a problem and hope that fixes it? Or is it going to be a focused campaign that actually goes to where it ought to be? So he needs to set the stage, I think, for the next year or two of where we're going to go and what the ultimate objectives are.
Carrie Moore, who has retired from teaching at Gettysburg College, worries that military spending must mean cuts in other programs.
Unemployment is going up. There are impoverished people, not only in the inner cities, but in rural America, including Gettysburg and Adams County. And I'm very much concerned about the fact that there's so many people that have inadequate or non-existent health insurance. So this money that we spend for, you know, protecting ourselves from the enemies from without and the enemies from within is money that cannot be spent for what I regard as problems that are at the very heart of our democracy.
We'll let Pastor Daniel Hans pronounce the benediction on this conversation with Gettysburg voters. Like most of the people we met there, and according to polls, most of the people in the country, he's prepared to give the president some running room.
When it comes to priorities, September 11 did change things. And as much as we need to talk about health care and finance reform and the economy, safety doesn't follow prosperity. It's the other way around. Prosperity would follow safety. And addressing some of these other very important concerns really need to be put underneath the umbrella of what happened on September 11th. And I would hope that the president would really exert leadership in terms of these are the priorities. We can't do everything, and I'm hoping that this president won't promise us everything, as we often have heard in the past.
Dr. Daniel Hans, pastor of the Gettysburg Presbyterian Church. Our thanks to the members of the Rotary Club of Gettysburg for their personal preview of President Bush's State of the Union address.